You know what I love about baseball? There's a game every single day. That's not a complaint. That's a gift. And right now you've got playoff basketball and playoff hockey running alongside the everyday of baseball. That's not a sports calendar, my friends. That's a buffet. MyBookie.ag has all of it. And if you're new, here's the deal. Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. First bet loses, they give you the money back, up to $500 in free play. Plus $25 in casino credit just for signing up. One rollover, that's it. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Now, go find a game. A while back, I went to get a life insurance policy the old-fashioned way. Physical exam, blood work, the whole thing. They turned me down. My numbers were bad. Now that rejection ended up being one of the best things that has happened to me. It kicked the health journey that I am still on. Down 30 pounds and counting. But I realize not everybody's in that situation. Maybe you've just been putting it off. Maybe the process always seemed like too much of a hassle. That's exactly what Ethos fixes. Ethos helps you find life insurance completely online, no medical exam, just a few simple health questions. Get a quote in seconds. Apply in minutes. Same day coverage, up to $3 million in protection. And some policies are as low as 30 bucks a month. There's no excuse to keep waiting on this one. Take 10 minutes and get covered today with life insurance through Ethos. Take 10 minutes and get covered today with life insurance through Ethos. Free quote at ethos.com/ZABE. ETHOS.com/ZABE. Application times may vary. Rates may vary.
This is the ZABEcast, hosted by a Pop-Tart loving kid from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. And since you probably have other, more important podcasts to waste your time on, screw those AirPods in tight and let's go.
Feeling down and dirty. Here we go. Tuesday, August 11, 2026. Thank you for downloading. It is day number 81 of the 109 days of summer. I count summer from the Friday before Memorial Day weekend to Monday Labor Day. Now, this year, Labor Day is on the last possible day it can be, which is the 7th. Labor Day is always on the first Monday of September. So some years it could fall on the 1st. This year, it's on the last day possible. So it kind of, in theory, extends summer. And then I say Friday before Memorial Day is the start of summer because you know well, ain't nobody getting shit done on the Friday before Memorial Day. That's 109 days this year. And we are 81 days in. So we got 28 days to go. Let's make the most of it. We're passing milestone after milestone after milestone. And that's a good thing. This week will be the first week of preseason football. And teams are beginning the dance of, well, how much do we plan to play our starters? And this to me is a fascinating annual sort of a debate and or decision that teams wrestle with. On the one hand, guys can get injured anytime. Like we said yesterday with Andy Pollin, Laremy Tunsil injured out for the year, most likely due to just a practice drill, torn bicep. Other teams, though, realize, well, we got some guys we got to work in there. And we got to get them up to speed. So we need to do some kind of playing in the preseason. We now have three preseason games, not four. The league would love to make that two and turn one of those worthless preseason games into a lucrative 18th game. That seems to have stalled just a bit. But how much should you play your starters? We'll find out. Thursday is when the first little batch of games come through. And we'll just see. The Steelers and Rodgers may play, according to some reports early on, under new coach Mike McCarthy. Of course, they play the Packers. Not that he needs, quote, revenge. He already played the Packers in the regular season last year. And they play the Jets after that. Not that he needs revenge on that. Speaking of the Jets and Rodgers, I wanted to get this into the record. In a recent interview, Rodgers said that Mike Tomlin, who got good reviews of his debut on Sunday Night Football, I did not see the broadcast, so I didn't get to see how he was. He could be an excellent analyst. He's going to always sound good and sizzly because, you know, the standard is the standard on Tomlin. He's pithy with the quotes, and his delivery is definitely saucy. but we'll see how he does in the long run. That said, Mike Tomlin, according to Rodgers, helped reinstate his true deep love for football. There was a Polymarket tweet, and these guys are bad about misrepresenting things that were actually said, so I actually had to go to Grok to ask, is this true? Polymarket tweeted the following. In case you saw this, I want to clarify it. Aaron Rodgers said that playing for the New York Jets made him hate football for the first time in his life. He credits Mike Tomlin for helping restore his love for the game. Okay. According to Grok, this claim has circulated recently, including a widely shared post on X, but it misstates what Rodgers actually said in a recent SiriusXM NFL radio interview with Pat Kerwin. In the interview, Rodgers discussed loving the game while reflecting on his age, 42, his long career and decision-making about continuing to play. He noted that the Achilles tear, the year of rehab, and the two rough Jets seasons, quote, kind of beats you up a little bit, and that he didn't want that to be how his career ended. He specifically credited Mike Tomlin and being around the Steelers for helping him, quote, get that love back, that deep love back for the game. Okay, couple things about Rodgers and the Jets. Rodgers is not blameless in how badly things went with the Jets. Rodgers was playing puppeteer GM the whole time. He was the guy that said, ooh, let's pay Alan Lazard a WR3 big money because I was comfortable with him in Green Bay. Hey, let's get Randall Cobb one more year of service time, even though everyone knows he's basically shot. Hey, things aren't going well. Let's get the head coach fired. Hey, here's my preferred offensive coordinator. He stinks, by the way. Let's bring him in. And then once he got hurt, he disappeared and only came back at the very end. The notion that everything the Jets did wrong those 2 years was without Rodgers involved is complete bullshit. He was complicit in the disaster. Now, the Jets can fuck up anything on their own. They don't need Aaron Rodgers' help. But let's not pretend like he's blameless there. I also just remember what he said right before the season began and right before his Achilles went snap, crackle, pop. Right before the season started, late August 2023, Rodgers spoke extensively to reporters about how happy and content he felt with the Jets, describing the whole experience as, quote, like waking up inside of a dream, a beautiful dream, and repeatedly saying things like, how cool is this, and that he felt he was exactly where he was supposed to be. You were with the Jets, sir. What happened was not a surprise to many of us. But he was also not blameless in the whole affair. I'm glad that Tomlin rekindled his love for the game. I'm glad that he is looking forward to this one last YOLO season at 42 with his former Packers coach, McCarthy. He may play very well if he stays healthy. We'll see. I'm not anti-Rodgers, but I am anti-bullshit. And I'm a guy who likes to remember, hey, didn't you say how you were so happy to be a Jet and you were right where you needed to be. Now you're like, oh yeah, the Jets experience nearly fucking ruined me. Okay. Just want to get that straight. In other NFL news over the weekend, looks like the Fall Guy says you'll have to get another Fall Guy. Teddy Bridgewater suddenly on Sunday told the Detroit Lions, yeah, nah, I'm out. He retired at 33 again. He had already been retired coaching high school football in Florida. Called him out of retirement, said, look, we know you're pretty good and you're smart. You could play a couple games for us if needed. Well, I guess it's like they say in the NFL, once you even start thinking about retirement, you're already retired. Bridgewater decided the couple million I'll make just holding the clipboard, most likely for Jared Goff, not worth it. So they instead get Josh Dobbs, the Pastronaut, signed, and he will be their backup in Detroit. The Anthony Richardson era in Indy appears to be over, and boy, was it brief. Anthony Richardson, who was a project coming out of Florida, built like a tank, not a good passer, drafted, what, fifth overall, something like that, a real reach, got hurt early on, never refound his footing. The moment that really doomed Anthony Richardson was when he tapped out of a game during what could have been a game-winning drive because he said he was tired. Tired? You don't get to tap out of a game because you say you're tired, for God's sakes. Aaron Donald's decision could come this week with the Rams. There are all kinds of metrics about just how unblockable Aaron Donald was when he played, just like there's metrics on just how unblockable Myles Garrett, now a Ram, is when he plays. The two of them together on the same field, even if Aaron Donald is 80% of what he once was, is an almost unthinkably devastating combination that I'm sure many people are salivating over, unless you're in that division or have to play the Rams this year. The new Bills Stadium is getting panned for its obstructed views. They promised PSL buyers every seat's a great seat. Well, except for this, this, that, and that one right there. Some of the seats, you can't even see half of one of the end zones. And I'm looking at the view going, there's going to be some awesome moments that happen in that half of that end zone right there. And you're going to want to see it, especially after paying big money. Some of the other railings that are obstructing views, yes, they are clear safety glass railings, but nobody wants to watch a game through a railing. I'm not a stadium designer. I don't know how much of this can be mitigated. I don't know what number of partially obstructed seats there are in a stadium of 65,000 people or whatever. The new field has been given good reviews. It's natural grass. They're going to work extra hard to keep it alive and vibrant in the cold Buffalo winters. We'll see about that. Lambeau Field is one thing. They don't get 3-foot snowfalls at Lambeau. They do in Buffalo. The Jumbotron has big Michael Scott energy when he showed off his flat screen in that epic episode of The Office where they invited everybody over to his apartment. And they're like, look at my flat screen. Tiny. But hey, it's a new stadium. It's going to get criticized. What also is getting criticized is their so-called Nickel City uniforms. Woof. To sum it up thusly, what the hell are even those? These are alternates, by the way, that will not be worn all year, just on a game or two. But so far, people are pretty much united in saying they totally suck. Maybe I was wrong about filming practice. Christian Parker, the new defensive coordinator for the Cowboys, says he really wishes fans and media would not film training camp practices because he said when he coached elsewhere, he relied on the footage when preparing to play the Cowboys early in the season. Well, early, does that mean first game? Second game? Once you get at least two games under your, you know, viewership, you're going to know the tendencies of the team you're about to play. But he says he didn't like it. And then there's this new fantasy punishment is dropped. This is, of course, for last place finishers in fantasy, a way to motivate guys to not just quit on the season and become a real liability in your league. You make the last place guy do something horrible, awful, embarrassing. And the severity of the last place punishments vary greatly. This one's up there. Somebody sent a picture. You could buy a ticket to a live one-man show at Heller Auditorium in Chicago. Colin Kaepernick live in Chicago. Last place has to buy a ticket and attend the Colin Kaepernick one-man stage show, lecturing people about racial inequality, injustice, and why his NFL career was unfairly cut short by bad, bad people. Yeah, I would grind hard to not finish last place in that fantasy league. Coming up, Andy Herman, Pack-A-Day podcast, the value of always be shipping all the time, relentlessly. We'll talk new media, the Green Bay Packers, and more with Andy Herman next. You are listening to the Zabecast. Here's a scenario for you. It's a Tuesday night. There's a game on. Maybe it's good, maybe not. Who knows? Could go sideways by the fourth inning. But if you're still parked on the couch, what are you going to do? MyBookie.ag Casino. That's what you do. Slots, blackjack, roulette, right there on your phone. And their live dealer tables are genuinely impressive. A real person dealing cards on a live feed. Feels a lot more like a casino than clicking a computer game, that's for sure. Use promo code ZABE at mybookie.ag. New players get $25 in casino credit on their first deposit automatically. And if your first sports bet loses, they refund it up to $500 in free play. Mybookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Is that a real physical set behind you?
It is. Yep.
Did you make it for your setup?
Yes. So that was new this year. It started in like my original one was just a blank room, and everyone said I was podcasting from a prison. And then I just had a Bart Starr picture behind me for a long time. And then this year, one of the things I wanted to do was, you know, up the presentation a little bit and have something a little bit cooler behind me. In fact, I need to flip this so it doesn't.
No, it's coming through fine. It's coming through fine.
But the jerseys are backwards.
No, they're not. Not to me. They are. Yeah. So they're just to you. Sometimes it displays that way, which is weird.
Got it.
But I can see it clearly. The Tremont Williams and the Nick Collins. And I can't see. Oh, that Charles Woodson right there. That is really sweet, Andy. And so I assume you got the sign off from the missus to go make that?
I actually didn't, just because I knew she would be 100% on board with it. That is one I didn't have to worry about. So in certain cases, yes, there would be things, but this one, anything for like the podcast or part of the business, she's, you know, 1,000,000,000% cool with.
See, so. I think that is so worth it. And it does look really good. And I applaud you for not doing a cheap green screen, which a lot of people might do. And you can swap out the jerseys.
Once I had the idea. Yes, and that'll be something I do over time as well, which will be really, really fun. This will probably stay up through the course of this season, and then once the off season hits, I'll probably do something different and get some new numbers and jerseys up there. So that'll be fun too.
Your jersey budget is gonna go through the roof. I hope you have a good arrangement with the pro shop. Because if it was me, I'd be like,
gotta figure something out for sure.
I'm like, cool, let's do the players of the game last week, but let's make sure it's the alternate. And you know, next thing you know, you got 1,000,000 jerseys in the house.
Yes, that could easily happen without, so I'm going to try to avoid that for now, but it could easily happen.
All right. Andy Herman, Pack-A-Day Podcast. Just what the name means, all Packers every day, all the days that end in a Y all year long, hosted by Blue Wire. Get it wherever you get your pods. My God, my man, how do you talk about this team every single day?
Well, the whole thing started as a labor of love. So for anybody who knows me well, I don't do anything halfway. It's extreme. It's either we do it, it's an A or an F. There's not going to be anything in between. So when I thought of a podcast, the whole impetus of the podcast was the New York Times, The Daily, where they had a daily episode talking about a news item every single day. And I'm like, you know what? I think there would be an appetite for something like that from a Packers standpoint. Now, The Daily at the time was going Monday through Friday, and that was my idea as well. And as soon as I had the idea, I posted it out there of like, who would like to join me on this podcast journey? I got like 200 some applicants. So it started off as me just being one of the days. So I would do Mondays, and then we had another person do Tuesday, and we had enough people that we did it 7 days a week instead of just doing five. And so it started as this idea of doing a daily podcast. It ended up being a 365-day-a-year podcast. And then eventually, when we got big enough and I was able to do it full-time, in fact, maybe, you know, probably 4 years ago, it was actually in 2020, so it was during the pandemic, actually, where my friend said, like, hey, you need to be doing YouTube as well, and you should just do your own little YouTube piece, like, every day. So I started doing that. And the rest was sort of history from there. And I think the cool thing for me is because it was a labor of love and because it was just something where, you know, we wanted to start talking about the Packers every day, it is such a passion and a fun topic that there are very few days, and I mean very few days, where I'm like sitting at my desk for a while where I'm like, what the heck am I going to talk about today? And the really cool thing is you know, now that I have 8 years of doing this, I can also look back. So if it's like, you know, June 2nd and there's absolutely nothing going on and I'm like, what the heck am I going to talk about? I can look back at all the June 2nds, you know, for the last 8 years and be like, all right, what the heck did I talk about at this time the year before? So I do have that sort of Rolodex of information too that I can always lean back on to be like, all right, what did I talk about in the past? So normally I have things, like I have just a list of things in my notebook that I want to talk about or get a topic on. And this is a time of year, obviously, where it's really, really easy, where all the information and topics are coming to us naturally.
Yeah. At this point, you will not have enough time to talk about all the stuff. In fact, I saw in the show description, it says 20 minutes a day, every day. And then I looked at your episode lengths and I was like 33, 42. I'm like, of course, Andy's going to have more to talk about than 20 minutes. So that's the nature of the beast.
It's a running joke at this point because, again, when we recorded that 20 minutes a day, that was Steve Perhatch is the one that did the audio on that. And that was our sort of thought because, again, the daily was kind of going that long that it was going to be like 5 episodes a week, 20 minutes a day. And all the vast majority of the episodes are like 40 minutes. A lot of them are even like an hour. So we still have it on there. And it's just more of like a running joke of I'm not changing it. It's too great. It's been there forever. And everyone knows at this point that if you get a 20 minute episode, it's like, what the heck just happened? It only went 20 minutes, but yeah, it's funny at this point.
Yeah. No, it's great though. I mean, I read a quote once that really hit home with me, especially for those of us that are creators, and that is always be shipping. Always be shipping. Ship product all the time. There is a market for it for sure. That Packer fans, and there's a similar networks out there like the Locked On Network that is literally every day. If you're a fan of the Utah Jazz or the Green Bay Packers or the Pittsburgh Steelers, you're going to want something about your team every day. Yep. And so you ship every day and you are fully integrated with the team. Now, the question I have for you is how have the grizzled old school vets on the beat, who I know many of them, you of course know them well, how have they treated you as part of what is kind of the new media?
Yeah, so you could tell when I very first got credentialed. I mean, even before that, you could tell that there was a little bit of, protecting the beat, so to speak, protecting the room, protecting the people that are there every single day. And, you know, I think one of the big things that, you know, from non-traditional media is there's a big emphasis on you got to be there every day. You got to be there in the locker room. You can't be doing this from far away. You can't be doing it unless you're credentialed and things like that. And I think over time, that is proven not to be the case. You can do a great job covering this team, whether you are in the building or not. You know, you mentioned Locked On. Peter Bukowski does a great job covering the team. He's in New York all year long. I don't think, you know, he doesn't get to any practices, maybe a game. Aaron Nagler, yes, he'll be in Green Bay for training camp and things like that, but that does an unbelievable job covering the team from New York as well. So that's not entirely true. When I first got credentialed, you could tell there was, you know, some, there wasn't the warmest reception. I'll just put it that way. And, you know, so a couple things that I will say in regards to that. The first thing I will say is there were obviously some people that were very nice. The second thing I'll say is 99.9% of that group I now, you know, have great relationships with, talk to on a daily basis. There's no animosity. There's no issues. There's no anything. And I think one of the things that they really have recognized for me is the time, effort, and energy that I put into this. It's not something that I'm just pretending to be knowledgeable on something and, you know, stealing everyone else's reporting and, you know, pretending that it's my own or anything like that. I always give credit if I'm using anything that was, you know, put out there by anybody else from a reporting standpoint. And again, I'm putting hours upon hours into this, making it unique, making it my own, et cetera. And what I'll add on top of it is the first thing I'll say is when you are in there, and obviously during training camp, I'm there every day and I'm at practice and things like that. And you will see that there are channels that are talking about things that happened at practice, like they were there, like they witnessed it, and they weren't. And as somebody that is now in their shoes to some extent and is seeing like, all right, so other channels will go live immediately following practice and just, you know, regurgitate everything that they found out from us who were at practice. And then so they are, you know, first to do it. And it's like, all right, well, I understand why you're doing it. And I did kind of the same thing at times. But then you do kind of realize, well, you know, I was at practice. I actually saw this and things like that. Right. So there is a little bit of a difference. I can understand it. And again, I like Rob Domofsky, for example. Rob was, I think, and he would be the first to tell you, and he's, you know, sort of apologized for it. He was very cold to me at the start, and he was somebody who, you know, again, it was just protective of the people in that room because of, you know, all the work and time, effort, and energy that they put into it. And they didn't want it sort of, I think, just undercut by whatever. And he had the best interests of the people that were working hard in that room at heart. And I appreciate it and I respect it. And Rob and I have a great relationship now. I talk to him and we're on the sidelines chatting every single day. He's one of my favorite people out there that I get to talk to. So I think there is just sort of a little bit of a wall that happens there from time to time. And then, you know, as you get to know people and they get to know me, I think that wall dissipates a whole heck of a lot more. And then, you know, just the last thing I'll say on it is one of the things that I really struggled with when I first started doing this, because even early on before I really had monetized things to the level that I did and before it got to a much larger level, I was getting quite a few views and I was getting quite a few reads when I was putting out content. And I would be writing, you know, whether it be on Cheesehead TV or Packer Report. And I would, you know, my writing was getting paid almost nothing. I mean, almost literally almost nothing when I was doing that stuff. And the podcast was not, you know, making much at the time. It was just still very early on. But here I'm cannibalizing reads and views from them who are in paid positions, who are doing this for their livelihood. I was not at the time. I was working in human resources and doing, you know, I was a associate director of recruiting at the time. And here I'm kind of undercutting what their value was because I'm making it pennies on the dollar. But where I struggle with that is like, I'm just having fun. Like I wanted to do this. I wanted to do this because it was a passion of mine. I had never even had really dreams of this becoming something I would do full time. I just really, really enjoyed it. I remember I had Wes Hodkiewicz on once on a podcast and I talked to him and I said, I really struggle because like, I know how important this is to you guys and I don't want to undercut what you are doing. And at the same time, it's such a passion of mine. I don't not want to do it either. So there is a little bit of that as well. But long story short, it was, you know, I understand there was maybe a little bit of coldness from at the very beginning that doesn't exist anymore. I work so closely with a lot of those guys and so many people were very nice from the beginning as well too. So it just is what it is.
Yeah. Wes, by the way, works for the team and he worked Packers.com, produces great stuff. Super nice guy. And yes, one of many guys that covers the team. Now, back to Nagler for a second. Aaron Nagler and Corey Behnke are the two guys behind Cheesehead TV.
Yep.
You know, Aaron lives in New York City for a variety of reasons, including family situations with his special needs daughter, but comes to practice every year at training camp. And Corey lives in this incredible house right next to Lambeau Field, which is where they do their Packer game sort of simulcast or second screen. Corey never goes to training camp, even though he lives there. And I asked Nagler, Andy, I go, where's Behnke? And he said, Behnke ain't about this life, but he loves the Green Bay Packers. I mean,
for sure.
Behnke is a true romantic when it comes to the Packers and the history of the team. He's got some amazing artifacts in his house that are all framed and they're beautifully done. Nagler himself is also a bit of a romantic, where I remember once, Andy, I was kind of digging in on Nagler off the air about, you know, you never say anything negative. Like, even when the team is doing things that are way suboptimal and everyone can see it, why is that? And he kind of just said to me, he's like, look, it's still the greatest thing in the world to be a Green Bay Packer fan. And that was the way he was positioning himself and their product. And so I respect that. You're a fan of the team, having grown up here in Wisconsin, correct?
Yep.
Okay. Do you consider your product to be fan-oriented or more journalist-oriented?
Yes. I think there's a bit of both. You know, I think obviously old media, there was always you have to have separation of church and state. You know, you can't be a fan of the team and cover the team. And now I think a lot of the times the best people that do cover the team are fans of the team because there is such a passion for it. And, you know, you can just see that passion come through in everything you're doing. So I view myself as obviously as a fan of the team. I'm wearing Packers stuff. I've got a Packers locker room behind me set up. So yes, I'm a huge fan of the team. However, I do still feel like there is a bit of a separation of church and state in the fact that when I step into a press conference with Matt LaFleur, Fan Andy is dead. You know, I am doing a job when I am in there, and I am not, you know, asking questions as a fan of the team. I'm asking, you know, things that I would want, I know that fans would want to know, whether that's got to be an easy question or a tough question or whatever. It's the same thing. And when I'm out there on the practice field, I am doing a job out on that practice field. It only enhances me being able to do that job because I'm a fan of the team, because as a fan, I know what to watch for. I know what fans are going to be interested in. I know what I want to watch for. But when I'm out on that field, it is a totally different thing. I consider it very much when I was in human resources. And, you know, I think when people before like, well, you can't separate those things. You have to either be one or the other. When I was in human resources, Andy, when I was at my job, was quite a bit different than bar Andy when I was not at my job. Those are two very, very different Andys. And yeah. When I'm at the bar, I'm not very buttoned up. When I am at work, I am very buttoned up. Right. And I think of it in a very similar way. When I'm in front of my TV watching the game, yeah, guess what? Fan Andy's coming out pretty freaking hard. And even sometimes when I'm on the podcast, you will absolutely see Fan Andy and you'll see that passion come through. But there are absolutely times and places, whether it's in a press conference or if I'm, you know, in my credentialed role and things like that, where you're going to see, you know, more of the, I don't know if I would say journalistic side because I'm not trained as a journalist or anything like that, but you're going to see a professional side of things. So I try to walk that line. And I also try to make it pretty abundantly clear when it, you know, I'm talking as a fan and when I'm more, you know, actually talking about something. I would say when you're listening to me on a video, you are getting me as if I am not a fan, but you know I'm a fan, and I'm doing this also with like the mindset of a fan. It's a really interesting dynamic between the two, to be honest.
It is. And for years in DC, me and my afternoon co-host Andy Polin, we would fully admit that the guys that are out there, the boots on the ground who are in the trenches, the bird dogs flushing the quotes and the stories out of Redskins Park, were like birds, and we were in the duck blind, Andy, and we were the ones going blam 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 blam. We were shooting the stuff yep. that they were flushing out, and we would rarely go and talk to the coaches or talk to the players, and that sometimes would get weaponized against us
yep.
where they say, oh, well, you wouldn't say that to his face. And our argument was, well, it's not our job to do that, because we as talk show hosts, our clients are the fans. We represent them. We have to be accountable to them. And yep. when a team is doing something calamitously wrong or stupid or idiotic, which it was a decade of that with the Redskins under Snyder, it was just awful. It was our job to be unflinching and saying, this is ridiculous. But it's different if you're out there covering the team. You have to approach it from a more neutral standpoint. So you're straddling the line nicely because you do a little bit of both.
Yes.
But you're still, if the team does something that is wrong, you will say it on your podcast. Luckily for Packer fans, it's a super well-run organization.
It is. And a couple things in regards to that, too. I don't do a ton of locker room. And one of the reasons I do this, I go out and I grade every single player on every single play. And I am talking about these players every single day. And a lot of times when you get in the locker room, you know, whether it's, you know, from a professional standpoint or whatever, you start to develop, obviously, those. I don't want to have like, well, I talk to Bo Melton in locker room every week. And so now maybe I'm a little bit skewed in my grading, or I'm going to be like nicer to Bo Melton on my podcast because I have that connection. I don't want to have to like then face him and be.
Or if a guy blows you off.
Vice versa. Like,
yeah. Am I yep. grading him low because he won't talk to me?
He was a jerk to me. Right. So I almost I'm not ducking the smoke or anything like that. I have no issue with that. I hope they don't even care what I have to say, to be quite honest. They shouldn't. Right. They should care what their coaches have to say. But I also don't want to be influenced by any of that. And the other thing I will say is, you know, I think I sometimes, not sometimes, I do get, you know, I think kind of confused a little bit more time as like the green and gold tinted glasses, you know, kind of like Nagler, you know, like you mentioned with Nagler earlier. And I think Nagler will call things out too. But I think the interesting thing for me is, I am in general an optimist, and I generally do hold sort of the same idea of Nagler of like football to me. And one of the reasons I do this whole thing is an escape from this crazy real world that we live in that we want to try to ignore from time to time. So as soon as sports for me becomes like, we're just, you know, we want every guy cut and we want every coach fired and we're just complaining and yelling and whatever. Like that to me almost takes away from one of the reasons that I enjoy doing this. It's not to say, you know, when the Packers lost their fifth straight game and in a heartbreaking fashion, and everyone at, you know, some, not everyone, but a lot of people up until that point were calling for Matt's job. And I'm like, you're insane. Why are you possibly calling for Matt's job? At the end of that playoff game and in the live show, I was like, listen, you do what you want. I understand it. And I said, you know, I would very much consider firing Matt too, just based on that. Now, as the week went on, I, you know, kind of got clear head. You're saying stuff in the moment right after it happens. And I would not have, but I do think, you know, when there is things to call out, I was very fine with, you know, firing, you know, even Rich Bisaccia this offseason. I know they didn't do it, but I would have been fine with that. With Joe Barry in the past, that there's been multiple things that I'm willing to call out when they're obviously incompetent. But I, in general, I am more of a positive person. So I think that spin sometimes gets caught as like, oh, he's not willing to call out the things. No, I'm happy to call out the things. I just, sometimes I think you have to let things breathe a little bit. And the worst organizations are usually the ones that are cutting and firing and changing over and over and over. And sometimes you do have to let things breathe a little bit and see where they can go and let people and players develop.
Yeah. What is Matt LaFleur's best trait? And what do you think is still his Achilles heel?
Yeah, let's start with the negative first. The thing I'll say about Matt is I think coaches, like players, have good and bad years. And I don't think last year was Matt's best year. I think there were certain things that he did when Jordan was out with Malik Willis and things like that, that in developing an offense that were still very, very good. But I think some of the time management stuff, the game management, not keeping the foot on the gas, you know, obviously some of the chokes at the end of games. I just think those are the things, especially just from like an in-game management and really having his team, you know, playing through for four quarters and finishing games, which is something that the entire organization, quite frankly, has called the team out for this offseason. I think those are things that he has to be able to improve upon and be better at and just trust his guys a little bit more. I think sometimes he tries to handhold and micromanage a game to try to get them through it. No, let them go win it and let them, you know, do the all gas, no break, wake up with your piss out, whatever you want to call it. Let them go do that. Don't just say it. Don't have it be a soundbite. Let them go do it. I think that's where he can improve. I think some of the stuff he's really good at, people think Matt's just a player's coach. I've seen him at practice. When people make mistakes, he will absolutely get after them. He talk about straddling a line. He wants to be a player's coach until you tell him he can't or show him that he can't. And then he turns very, very quickly into the guy that is not a player's coach, and he will hold you accountable in those situations. And I think just more importantly than anything, he has shown that whether it was Aaron Rodgers, you know, who was not the same Aaron Rodgers, prior to Matt getting here, and then Matt got him back into MVP form, whether it was Jordan Love in his very first season as a starting quarterback, or whether it was Malik Willis as a backup quarterback that he had to develop an offense for, Kevin O'Connell gets quarterback whisper thrown around, but Matt LaFleur has basically been able to handle anybody besides Clayton Tune at that quarterback position and make them successful so far. And I think just the offense that he runs, the mindset that he has as a play caller and his ability to get quarterbacks in positive situations and have them perform, I think is truly his superpower. And I think just keeping that consistency for Jordan is one of the huge reasons that Ed Policy wanted to keep Matt along or around so that Jordan can continue that development as a top quarterback in this league.
All right, exit question. Ed Policy, you mentioned, is entering his second year as team president, and it is the closest thing the Packers ever get to having an owner.
Right.
Team president has tremendous influence, but does not have as much power as a true owner. If there were, Andy, a mythical owner that was the perfect owner,
yeah,
a super shrewd titan of industry who hired great people, let them do what they do best, was stripped of kind of excessive ego, but was still willing to step in and make big decisions, important counterintuitive decisions that are unpopular at the time that are needed to be made. Would that type of owner help the Packers? I know that guy doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But that dynamic, is that one thing that is still a little bit at times a bit of a headwind for this team?
I'm going to say no, simply because I think the right president/CEO can do those same things. Like if you had the perfect mythical president CEO, I think they're doing those exact same things. And I think the biggest thing that you mentioned, and I think what Ed Policy has been really great at so far, is you want to let your powers that be the powers that be. I don't want Ed Policy involved in any of those decisions. The only decision that Ed Policy should be making from a football standpoint is the one that he made this offseason, which is, Is Brian Gutekunst still the right person for the job? Is Russ Ball the right person for the job? And is Matt LaFleur the right person for the job? And, you know, whether he made the right or wrong decision on that, time will tell. We'll find out over the course of the next handful of seasons or so. But those are the only like football decisions that I want my either owner and or the CEO slash president making. And right now, it seems like Mark Murphy was very much on that same wavelength of my job is to hire those three guys and let those three guys figure out the entire football operation. And it seems like Ed Policy is very much, I'm going to hire those three guys or retain those three guys and let those three guys handle the entire football operation. And as long as it's working that way, again, they might get some hires wrong as to who those three people are, or they might retain them too long. Maybe they did that this time, maybe they didn't. Again, we'll wait and see, but that's really all I want that person doing. And as long as they continue to do that, I'm very, very good with what that structure looks like.
Yeah. Did Policy sign off on the Parsons trade?
My assumption would be yes. I don't think that if you're Brian Gutekunst, I don't think Ed Policy was surprised by the Micah Parsons trade. Let's put it that way. I'm sure he was well aware.
He didn't wake up and look in the paper. Oh, wow, we got Parsons. Well, it's going to be expensive. Okay.
Correct. Yeah. So I think that there is probably a final sign off slash heads up. But
so it's a sign off. It's less of a, hey, go get Parsons. And then Goody has to run around and make it happen.
I think if there was a mandate, if Ed Policy said like, hey, there's a, like, if there was something like that, I think it would be, hey, I want you to be more aggressive in getting top talent to Green Bay. I think it would be something like that. I don't think it would be, hey, go get Micah Parsons. I think he would say something like, I want to see us be a little bit more aggressive, bringing some top end talent to Green Bay. And then Goody would say, all right, I understood. Let's see what we can do. And then I think it would be him going out and finding a guy like Micah Parsons and making it happen. I don't even think it was that. I think it was more of, this opportunity came up, Goody saw it, acted on it, and before acting on it in full, got Ed Policy involved and said, hey, this is what we're thinking, just want to make sure everything's good with this, that there's no issues on your end. And because I think the reason that has to be is because, you know, Goody does not have, you know, power over Russ Ball or Matt LaFleur, and so there does sort of take a, hey, Matt, do you want this guy, which I'm sure was the quickest yes in the world, but the Russ Ball part is probably a little bit more because as we saw in the financials, Green Bay spent a crap ton of money on signing bonuses to the point where they actually lost revenue this past year. A huge part of that was a big signing bonus for Micah Parsons, amongst others. So I'm sure there was probably some sign off there. And then you present everything organizationally to say, hey, here's what this will do to 2026 in free agency. Here's what it'll do to 2027. And I'm sure that if you're Ed Policy, you want to know that. But at the same time, I don't think he's getting in the way and being like, you know, no, we're definitely not doing this, or like, yes, you have to do this. I think it's more of like, yep, I see everything. You've planned it all out. I'm good with it. You do what you need to do to make this team the best it can possibly be.
Yeah. Russ Ball's the capologist for the Packers. And yes, you do have to worry about the cash part of it, not just the cap. And that's important. We don't want the sledding hill prices to go through the roof here.
Can't
to
have
pay
it
for players. Right. And of course, the bad owners, Andy, they just tell their GM, go get this player who I saw on TV. And the poor GM has to go find him, and then it usually works out poorly. That's what we saw in Washington for many years.
Yeah.
So it's much better to have it done this way. All right, $100 free spin on the 1, 2, 3, 4 in this competitive NFC North this year. Go.
Oh, Packers, Bears, Lions, Vikings.
Okay. Is it amongst the four?
Tight amongst the Vikings. Three.
Okay.
Tight amongst the three. I think the Vikings are just going to be, I don't know what your swearing threshold is. So I'll just say pain in the butt here on this one. I think they're going to be a pain. I think they're going to be a pain for everyone to play in this division. I don't think anyone's going to be excited to play. Because if you get like any good game where like Kyler is just like, you know what, I'm going to play like an unbelievable player today, which he can do. It's just never consistent. That offense is going to be very difficult to play against. I think their O-line is good. Of course, I think they have one of the best, if not the best wide receiver trios in the league. And Brian Flores is a pain to play against. He could have 11, you know, street free agents that are out there, and he would still put in a playbook or just a play design throughout the course of the game, a scheme that's going to annoy the heck out of you. So I think that team will always be a pain to play. I don't think they're any threat to make any sort of playoff run or anything like that, but I still would put them fourth. I don't think Detroit's going to be as good as people think they are. Just a bold take on my end. I'll put them third, and then Chicago, Green Bay is where I get a lot more. I do think Chicago is going to have some come back to earth, but I think Green Bay is going to have a tough time, especially with Mike out to begin the season as well. So if you wanted to put Chicago, I know nobody wants to. But if you want to put Chicago 1, Green Bay 2, I could see that as well.
All right. Andy, keep shipping, my man. Good stuff. I appreciate your time. Thank you, brother.
Thanks, man. Talk to you soon.
Okay, let's end on some listener feedback and hashtag elite tweets. Jeffrey Loperfido emails me to say, if you don't mind, can you please unsubscribe me from the subscriber edition of the Zabecast? I'm out. I said, oh no. What happened? Here's what he wrote. I've been a listener since I moved from LA to Arlington in 2005. I even texted in years ago after Scott came back from California with beach tar stuck to his foot. I've been a fan ever since. Oh no. Feel like he's a fan and now I'm losing him. When you launched the podcast, I subscribed on day one. Oh, so he is an Alecoin subscriber. For the last 10 years, you've been part of my daily routine, dropping my kids off at school, then taking an hour-long walk along the shore here in Delray Beach. Even more incredible. What have I done? At one point, you and Charge proudly described yourselves as libertarians. During this administration, though, I haven't heard you acknowledge how many of the policies being proposed or enacted conflict with those principles. Instead, the show seems increasingly focused on low-hanging culture war topics. As a result, what used to be a peaceful, meditative walk now include more of that than I care to listen to. I also don't think the guests bring the same level of comedy or insight they once did, and Charch has become someone I no longer enjoy listening to. Okay. I'm still a fan of Fridays, so I'll miss Scott and Solly. And as you often say about elections, you get one stone to throw. This is mine. Well, understood. I get it. That's fine. Yeah, there are a lot of things that I'm not happy about with the way this country is being run. A lot of absolute boneheaded dog shit, stupid, shady, probably illegal shit that this administration is doing. But you don't need me calling that out. The mainstream media is all over it. And then they're inventing ones on top of that. That's how a healthy democracy works. The problem is, when there's a Democrat in office, the mainstream media just is like, what? No, is that a problem? Well, I'm unaware of that. I don't worry about there being a I'm not worried when there is a Republican in office about a vigorous and aggressively acute monitoring of all the shit that is being done that is not right, possibly illegal, or downright shady. I don't worry about that because there will be that scrutiny. I don't know if I need to do that on this podcast. Do I need to say, hey, this thing here, I also hate this thing here. By the way, I think the whole Iran war is a complete debacle, and it's something that Trump blundered into thinking this will be easy. No, it's not easy. And now it's like the tar on your foot after walking on the beach. It's going to be dicey for him to get it off. But I digress. That said, I'm going to continue to try to bring on new guests like I did today with Andy Herman to keep things fresh and to help, put the guys that I do have, my regular guys, who have proven to be entertaining or bring value to the table. I'm going to keep poking them to still bring that same energy. But as far as me canceling your subscription, I don't do that. I can't do that. You have to do that. Trust me, I would have canceled some people's subscriptions a long time ago if I had that power because they were pissing me off. So, Jeffrey, if you haven't canceled already, hang in there. Maybe. Maybe you can still give me some leeway here. Otherwise, I'll have to do without your $5, and well, we'll need two more listeners if Jeffrey Loperfido is out. This one from Matt Sherman in Michigan. Zabe, you insist that Shohei Ohtani gambled illegally or violated MLB gambling rules. This is a pretty significant allegation without evidence. Okay, two things, Matt. One, it's an opinion. It's not an allegation. And as far as evidence goes, you say without evidence. I mean, it was his money that went to a bookie. That's evidence. Oh, but no, but he didn't send the money. It was his interpreter. Oh, okay. And his interpreter fooled Ohtani. Oh, okay. And all of the financial safeguards and stopgaps and advisors who are hovering over Ohtani's mountain of money, none of them raised any red flags. None of them have been fired because of this oversight that let $17 million walk out the door to an illegal bookie by way of Ipe Mizuhara. There's evidence. It may not be the smoking gun. It may not be a direct text message from Shohei's phone saying, hey, I like the Raiders plus 7.5 tonight, load the boat. But there's evidence. There's also circumstance. There is also what I like to call, what is called Occam's razor, which is most often the simplest explanation is the correct explanation. I'm leaning towards the Occam's razor on this. Why? Because of the amount of money involved, the fact that nobody stopped it when it was happening because it seemed fishy as hell, and here is the most important part. Athletes are gamblers. Do I need to cite the examples from Michael Jordan to Charles Barkley to Phil Mickelson? It's in their DNA. They need the thrill. They want that juice. So all the conditions are there for Occam's razor to be right, which is, yeah, of course he was fucking Ohtani. What do you think? Anyhow, Matt goes on to say, if you're going to make these allegations, please tell your listeners who exactly the FBI and IRS agents who are covering up Ohtani's involvement. Okay. I'm going to name names. It's Detective Johnson. He's in on it. Not a nebulous FBI, but what agents exactly covered this up? Sir, you're asking for something I can't do. These investigations are completed by GS-13 special agents overseen by supervisors. Now, at this point, I don't know if my friend Matt Sherman from Michigan is either a Dodger fan or an FBI employee or both. The agents have no incentive to cover up Ohtani's involvement in this illegal activity. Probably not, but they may not have the incentive to dig deeper to unravel it. They may not have the resources allocated to them by the government to say, okay, I want you to spend more time, more money, interview more witnesses, dig deeper. What's really going on here? Just because they didn't find anything doesn't mean that they necessarily looked as hard as they could or would in other circumstances. Anyhow, Matt goes on to say, but if you're going to make these allegations, their opinions, at least have evidence to tell us who exactly covered this up. Yeah, here's the thing. There was an incentive by Major League Baseball for them to clear Ohtani of gambling. You don't need me to spell that out, do you? A massive incentive to do so. So the conditions were already right for this thing to be a quick sweep it under the rug. Doesn't mean it was. And by the way, it's still quite plausible that in theory it was just Ohtani or just Ipe working as a rogue translator. There's too much fishy about it, and the investigation compared to other investigations was too cursory, too quick for many of us to buy it at face value. And knowing that athletes are inherently gambling fucking degenerates at heart, it just doesn't add up. Now, that said, I'm going to do the necessary deep dives and watches on the documentaries. I'm going to read up as much as I can, and I'll come back with a further book report of either, well, you know what? Maybe Matt Sherman's right. Or I might come back and say, the fuck he is innocent. You kidding me? There's a whole side rant, he says, about your standards when it comes to athlete misconduct is varying greatly. Sometimes you say there's no criminal conviction, so leagues can't take any action. And at times you wonder why leagues don't take more action for misconduct that actually isn't criminal. I never know where you are coming from on these things because your standards change frequently. My standards, they're not uniform across the board. Some things matter more to me than others. I do think leagues should punish players more harshly for DUIs because that is a reckless act that can kill another innocent. I don't think they should be in the business of policing relationships with every allegation of domestic abuse because domestic abuse is 1,000 shades of gray. And also, you know, a lot of times there is a co-abusive nature to the relationship. Not that anyone deserved it. I'm not saying that, but it's complicated. DUIs are less complicated. Hey, you were fucking drunk and could have killed somebody or did crash into somebody and injured them. Yeah, you're going to fucking get suspended. So that's why I have different standards. Some things matter differently to me more than others. Anyhow, Matt Sherman goes on to say that he thinks there's plenty of jobs that athletes should be, professional athletes are no different than others in different lines of work. In my opinion, many more of them should be fired and have to choose a different career. Leagues allow far too much ridiculous behavior that would never be tolerated in a business. Correct. It's because sports is a massive business and talent is the ultimate decider of what you can get away with. More talent, more mayhem. Less talent, get the fuck out. It's that simple. Thank you, Matt. I appreciate the feedback. Those are some valid and interesting thoughts. I hope I answered your questions there. Time now for what I like to call hashtag elite tweets, things that are thoughtful, interesting, unique, funny, things that I wish I was smart enough to write myself. This one from Neat. Nothing gets you more fired up for a five-day work week like spending your weekend doing laundry, cleaning, grocery shopping, and everything else you didn't have time to do during the week. I get it. Of course, you're also lying to yourself saying, I don't have time to do laundry or clean during the week. You do. You're sitting on the couch scrolling. Tom Holland shared a quote, tweets Coco, if you have a problem with me, text me. And if you don't have my number, you don't know me well enough to have a problem with me. That really stuck with me. That's a good one. This one from Kitsy. Explain to me the logic of owning a summer house. Bro, you get like 30 summers left, and instead of Airbnb-ing it around the world, you're going to go to the same place because it has your furniture? I agree, but when you get to a certain level of wealth, owning a second home, it doesn't matter. You own a second home, a third home, a fourth home, and you want it to be your home. Then there's this. Social media has been for women what body police cams have been for criminals. Total demystification. I don't know how much these stories are true that get circulated on social media about dating and stuff like that. One tweet said a girl was given the ick because her boyfriend or a guy that she was dating for the first time ordered a beer, did not have a bottle opener, asked her for one. She was able to open the bottle of beer with her cigarette lighter, and that gave her the ick because he was not competent. He then went on to say, well, next time we're out and I order a beer, I'm going to pretend like I don't have a bottle opener just to trigger you, and then that turned her on. People are like, you're crazy. What are you talking about? Many such times. How true are these? I don't know. Then there's this one. Mrs. B tweets, I think it's hilarious that a bunch of lesbians are arguing over what a woman is. Ma'am, you literally have your face in it every night. That's a stereotype. They're not all playing for that team. And those that do, God bless them. They're all God's children, deserve love and respect, and we certainly do. But that's a funny tweet right there. All right, thanks for listening. As always, rate and review. Tell a friend about this podcast. I know there's quite a few of them out there. My God, look at all the podcasts. Many of them excellent, some of them not so much. Some of them have huge financial corporate backing with the fancy sets and the high-profile guest bookers. We don't have that. We got me, We got this microphone. We got the truth. And we got three chords. Three chords and the truth, right? That's the core of every country song, or so they say. But do rate and review and tell a friend. I appreciate it. We'll keep this thing growing and keep this thing going as long as my voice holds out. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful Tuesday, and we will see you next time. The playoffs are here, people. NBA and NHL both going at the same time. That's the best 2 weeks in the sports calendar, right? And it goes fast. More games, more angles, more ways to be right, and more ways to win. That's the fun. MyBookie.ag has it all. And right now, for new players, use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. And if your first bet doesn't hit, they refund it up to $500 back as free play one-time rollover, plus $25 in casino credit automatically. That's called insurance, my friends. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.